Thanks, Luca, for inviting me and for the introduction. This indeed will be a goodbye seminar, in a sense. And so I thought about speaking about two of the projects that I have completed during my time at Perimeter, both about black holes, with Benjamin Knorr, who was a postdoc here and then moved to Nordita, and Jaime Redondo Juste, who was a PSI student, and then now is a PhD student at NBI. This work, in a sense, is driven by a philosophy that that is by now like the driving philosophy of my research in general, that cross-fertilization of ideas and approaches may be very important to make progress in quantum gravity. And of course, one can take this philosophy in different directions. So, for instance, by exploiting and combining ideas across different theories, for instance, string theory and asymptotic safety, and I've done some work in this direction as well. Across different fields, so for instance, combining quantum gravity and effective field theory, but also, and this is the topic of this talk, by combining insights from top-down and bottom-up approaches. And in particular, I will exploit this combination in the context of black hole physics. And the key question clearly is how do quantum black holes look like? We have by now so many observations, black hole images, black hole shadows, and gravitational waves. And it is really impressive how these look so much like black holes predicted by general relativity. But at the same time, we know that black holes in general relativity cannot be consistent because of their singularities. And the singularities indeed is one of the motivations why the theories of quantum gravity have been developed. So it is clear that we need some sort of mechanism for singularity resolution. And this mechanism may come from quantum gravity, so by modifying the theory that we are dealing with, or by exotic matter, or perhaps both of them. Of course, this talk is mostly about quantum gravity modifications. On the other hand, I mean, several proposals, alternatives to quantum black holes have been suggested, have been advanced. And these include regular black holes, wormholes, fastballs. And these, some are inspired by quantum gravity. Some have a little bit more clean derivations. But in general, we do not know which alternative to classical black holes will be realized. And most probably, the answer is related to the specific approach to quantum gravity that we are looking at. Because of course, there are a plethora of them in an imaginary space of all possible theories. We have loop quantum gravity, asymptotically safe gravity, string theory, non-commutative geometry, Ojava gravity. And how black holes look like, at least theoretically, will depend on the specific theories that we are dealing with, unless there are, of course, connections between approaches, which is not over the topic of this talk. And in this talk, I will not focus specifically on an approach to quantum gravity, but I will tell you how, in my opinion, combining top-down general top-down and bottom-up insights can be key to constrain quantum black holes. And the general strategies in the context of quantum gravity maybe roughly summarized in top-down approaches and bottom-up. So one could start at high energies from a certain ultraviolet completion of gravity. It may be string theory, asymptotically safe gravity, loop quantum gravity, non-commutative geometry, and then do computations and at low energies come up with a set of predictions that hopefully are not all possible theories that you can write down, but just a finite set of models. And this would be this way, like the top-down approach, where predictions are derived from scratch. But of course, this is generally very difficult. We need to rely on approximations. We need to make assumptions. On the other hand, the bottom-up approach can be very useful in constructing models that perhaps take into account theoretical constraints, observational data, the fact that we want to recover Einstein gravity at large distance scales. And they are particularly useful because they are also model independent, but a direct connection with quantum gravity is sometimes missing. This talk will be about two examples on how to combine the two, so bottom up and top down, in order to constrain quantum black holes. So let me start from the bottom up, and in particular on model building in the context of black holes. So if we start from very simple, asymptotically flat spherically symmetric solution, that is essentially the Schwarzschild solution, which is singular at r equal to zero, exactly in this plot, like here. And in order to resolve the singularity, from a model building point of view, what one can do is to modify appropriately the Laplace function by modifying the radial dependence of this part of the metric. And so in a sense, what you need here is an effective Newton coupling which depends on the radial coordinate at the very least, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry to interrupt. There was a question before. I didn't see it.
Oh, okay.
I just noticed it now. So there's Liz asking, mm-hmm. where do quantum white holes fit in, mm-hmm. here? Well, here, I suppose, is the previous slide picture.
Well, that's one of the possible alternatives to classical black holes, or actually also in classical GR. They, as far as I understood, as far as I know, there are models of white holes that are inspired by quantum gravity, but at least to my best knowledge, a clean derivation like from scratch, like from quantum gravity to getting these solutions is missing. My talk is indeed about trying to make this connection again, trying to make this connection. Okay. And so, of course, there are several ways of modifying the Laplace function, modifying the black hole metric, which is ad hoc, just to resolve the singularity. And the idea is that this function should go to zero sufficiently fast so that curvature invariants do not diverge at the center. And what we need to do in order to do that is to violate the hypothesis of the singularity theorems. And that can be done, of course, in different ways as well. And so there have been even classical proposals on how to modify the black hole metric in order to resolve the singularity. And the two examples are, for instance, the Hayward black holes, where the Laplace function looks like this. And asymptotically, if one expands, there are this type of corrections of the type 1 over r to 4. And Simpson-Visser space-times, which also resolve the singularities, have a different, slightly different scaling asymptotically. And please keep in mind this type of scaling for later, as it will be important. So in particular, these numbers 3 and 4. And on top of classical proposals on how to resolve singularities, there have been several proposals inspired or partially derived by quantum gravity in the context of loop quantum gravity, asymptotic where one of the first models proposed was the model of Planck stars, asymptotic safety inspired black holes, where the idea is that gravitational anti-screening, so this effective anti-screening effective decrease of the Newton coupling at high energies may resolve the singularity, and other proposals in the context of string theory, such as the Fastball paradigm. And the question is whether we can make more substantial connections between these proposals and top-down derivations in quantum gravity. So now, the quantum gravity bit. Of course, what we would like to do is to start from a given ultraviolet completion of gravity and make clean predictions about what we expect at large distance scales. And this would also be useful in order to contrast the predictions of different theories. Of course, the technical challenge in doing that is that we need to resume quantum fluctuations. And there are different ways one can approach the problem. One that I've been working on and that I think is particularly interesting and particularly useful is the framework of path integrals. So the idea would be to sum over all possible field configurations of the path integral, starting from a certain fundamental action. And of course, this one is just an example written down for the case where the fundamental degree of freedom of your theory is the metric. But there are, of course, different theories, different examples where the fundamental degree of freedom is not the length metric. It could be the area metric in loop quantum gravity, or in the case of string theory, there would be other fields as well. And the sum of this average over all possible field configurations defines, in practice, what we call the effective action. So the equivalent, a quantum equivalent of the fundamental action, which, however, encodes all quantum effects. And as I mentioned, this can be generalized in case of different theories. So depending on whether one has a theory which is discrete or continuum, one may modify the path integral itself, or one can modify the fundamental degrees of freedom by changing the field in this path integral, or the symmetries of the action. And these are what would define, in the end, the theories that we are looking at. In discrete theories, may be more difficult to define such an object, but in principle, this is conceptually possible. And the effective action is particularly useful also because it would be a practical way of distinguishing between different theories, as different theories would lead to different corrections at an effective level to Einstein gravity. And in particular, such corrections would be encoded in the higher derivative Lagrangian, which contain, of course, both classical and quantum fluctuations. And one way of parametrizing the higher derivative Lagrangian is via a curvature expansion, where there are also functions in general of the D'Alembertian operator. And as I will detail better later, these form factors depend on the specific theory. And perhaps at low energies, we have some insight about them from effective field theory. So in principle, the knowledge about these form factors would be really important to understand modifications of general relativity, and also modification of the space-time in cosmology and in black hole physics. Because with the effective action computed, we could also have access to an effective modified dynamics. And if we are able to solve these solutions, these equations, then we would also have access to modifications of quantum cosmology, quantum black holes. Now, the issue that has been around for several years is that effective actions are very difficult to compute, at least to very good precision. And in some theories are even not known. So that's why in the literature there has been so much work in the direction of model building black hole solutions beyond the general relativity, which were not straightforwardly connected to quantum gravity derivations. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, you're talking about field theory and so mm-hmm. get it. But what about the quantum mechanics that people developed? Because mm-hmm. you know, already there it's super, super complicated to compute the effective action. So is there an effort to understand that? Let's say for the harmonic oscillators or simple quantum mechanical system that we know how to solve from one hand?
Well, I also think that in quantum mechanics, maybe computing the effective action is not the easiest way to compute corrections to observables. But this has been particularly useful, for instance, in the context of the standard model of particle physics. Therefore, I mean, as at least at the on the large distance scales, we would expect to recover the language of quantum field theory, then we can try to use the same type of approach. And I mean, we know methods to compute the effective action, like the function normalization group, but there are also like the effective action could also be reconstructed using amplitudes technique, and also there is probably something else that I'm forgetting, but it is a unifying language because it can be computed using different methods, and this is what reconnects more straightforwardly to the framework of general relativity, effective field theory. And so on.
Yeah, I know. I was just asking. You know, mm-hmm. Anyway, if it's a useful concept, maybe it's useful. I mean,
I mean, not that I know.
The system, mm-hmm. and then see whether this language is or for what type of problem it is useful or how intractable.
We know that it is useful in the context of the standard model.
Quantum mechanics.
Yes, quantum mechanics. I don't know.
Mechanical, simple uh-huh. quantum mechanical.
Yeah, system. I don't know. Okay. So this is the state of the art, but now if we assume that singularity resolution the key to singularity resolution is introducing quantum gravitational effects, then whatever is the replacement of Einstein black holes, so would it be regular black holes or wormholes or anything, at least at large distances, they should come from a principle of least action dictated by corrections to Einstein gravity, and in particular by a quantum effective action. At least in approaches to quantum gravity where one recovers the language of quantum field theory at large distance scales. And in particular in this talk, I'm going to give you now the first example of how top-down and bottom-up methods can be exploited together in order to give and to derive constraints. And the idea, since computing effective actions is so difficult currently, the idea would be to reverse the logic and ask, okay, I have so many models of black holes beyond general relativity. Can I select them by imposing that they come from a principle of least action in quantum gravity? So if they can come from a principle of least action, at least at large distances, then maybe they have a chance of being viable solutions stemming from quantum gravity. And so, in particular, which proposed alternatives can come from such effective actions. And for this talk, I will focus on the asymptotic region. And this has a double motivation. So although in the asymptotic limit, you cannot really see differences, strong differences between the different approaches to quantum gravity, it is true that in the asymptotic regime, we can trust the framework of effective field theory and quantum field theory. And therefore, even approaches that at short distance scales do not rely on Lagrangian descriptions or are discrete and so on, in principle, at large distance scales should reconnect with a language, a continuum language, and the language of quantum field theory. And moreover, I will not rely on any specific approach to quantum gravity, and the constraints that in this way I'm able to derive are really general. They just come from the requirement of the black hole models stemming from a principle of least action. So now let's go a little bit into the details of the work. And we consider a metric of this form. So it is static and spherically symmetric and asymptotically flat in particular. And in principle, we can have two different Laplace functions, so the time and the radial component for the metric, which asymptotically can be expanded in this way. So we have a part which, of course, resembles Schwarzschild black holes, and a correction which would stem from quantum modifications of gravity. And this modification can be parametrized by four parameters. So this coefficient here and the exponent defining the correction. And we want to understand whether this can come from, can be generated by a quantum effective action of this form, since this is generic way of writing down an effective action for a diffeomorphism invariant theory for the metric degree of freedom, which at large distance scales at least should work. And now we know that the Schwarzschild part comes from a principle of least action coming from general relativity, just the Einstein-Hilbert term without a cosmological constant. And the question is, what are the constraints on CT, CR, and T, and NR coming by imposing that this solution resolve the field equations of this action, associated with this action? So now the procedure is to take an ansatz for the effective action with a general coefficients, so I will not specify them because they depend on the specific approach to quantum gravity. And out of this, one can compute the field equations. So first variation of the effective action, and each of these terms will give a contribution to the field equations. And then one can replace the metric with this Laplace function in this equation, set it to zero, and see then what are the constraints on these coefficients for it to be a solution.
There's a question of Lee. You can unmute yourself.
Yes. Thank you. I don't. What happens when we're in the semi-classical quantum theory to the theorems that impose spherical symmetry? Because we know everything you're writing down is spherically symmetric, but I don't think there's a reason to restrict to the case of only spherically symmetric fluctuations when we go to further order in quantum theory.
So if you are referring to the approximation that we are employing, so the case of spherically symmetric spacetimes, that was our first, so since this was the first work in the direction of connecting action principle and black hole models, we chose the simplest possible case, also because computation can become very complicated very quickly. And therefore, we used this setup for this first work. But now we are also doing some work in generalizing what we have done to configurations that are axially symmetric. But this is not published yet, and we don't have the results yet, so I cannot say much in that direction.
But maybe you compute the equations of motion without imposing the symmetry, and then you put the ansatz of
exactly.
The symmetric only after.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just take the general action, compute the field equations, replace my ansatz, and then see whether and under which condition it is a solution. So I'm just placing the field equations here for your convenience. And I will also set NT equal to NR for presentational purposes, but we did the computation for general indices with the indices being different. And now let's focus for a moment on the case where we don't have non-local form factor, just to start from the simple case, and see what happens in that case. So we would have two constants here, and then we can compute these contributions to the field equations. So the GR contribution with the solution with this ansatz for the spacetime metric replaced would give this sort of scaling. So R to minus 2 minus n, where this n is exactly equal to nr and nt in my ansatz for the metric. And now say that I have a theory like perturbative quantum gravity, so stellar gravity, where I do not have R cube operators. Well, these solutions would not work because this type of terms would give rise to a scaling which is R to minus n minus 4. So this term plus this term only cannot be equal to zero, unless I set, of course, these coefficients to zero. And therefore, so this one alone cannot cancel the GR term, and in stellar gravity, so just this part of the action, this type of asymptotic expansion would not work. In order to make this type of spacetimes with this type of asymptotic expansion work, we need at least terms that are cubic in the spacetime curvature. And this is because these terms lead at the level of the field equation, so the third term that you see here, to a scaling R to minus 8, which is independent of n. And therefore, for specific values of n, so say that n is equal to 6, then I can find some coefficients for which this plus this can be zero, so for which this can be a solution. And I can also add higher derivative terms where I will find other type of scaling which are independent of n, so like R to minus 10, R to minus 11. And for each of these terms, I can match the GR contribution for specific values of n. But this means that if I only have local terms, then I can have this type of solution only for specific values of n. Otherwise, it cannot come from a principle of least action. So requiring the connection between a black hole model and the principle of least action puts a constraint on the type of scaling, on the type of deviation from Schwarzschild black holes. And in particular, this n should be bigger or equal than 6 and different than 7. As you, this is something that you can see as one goes, if you go higher order in this expansion and derive the corresponding contribution to the field equations. And now, if you remember, at some point in the talk, I told you, I asked you to remember the scaling in the case of, for instance, Hayward and Simpson Visser spacetimes, because they would have a scaling 1 over R2-4 and 1 over R2-3, which are not compatible with the constraint that I have shown you. So it means that if I have a local axon, then I cannot have this type of solution coming from quantum gravity, coming from an axon principle in quantum gravity. Now, of course, I could modify still this solution to meet the constraints. So I could replace this R cube with R2-6, and then they would meet the constraints. But still, relating the answers to a principle of least action already places constraints on the deviations from Schwarzschild spacetimes. But now, the question is whether there is a way out to these constraints, because if, say, that tomorrow I make an observation, and for whatever reason I manage to say that Hayward black holes are the black holes that describe our universe, is there a way they could come from a principle of least action? And there could be a way out, but it is related to the possible existence of non-localities in the effective action. And in particular, what one would need to evade the constraints that I have shown you would be non-local terms of this form, so infrared non-localities. And this is because as you compute the field equations with this type of non-local contributions, or even higher order non-localities at higher orders in the derivative expansion, you manage to match exactly the scaling of general relativity coming from this type of ansatz for the asymptotic expansion of the solution. So in this case, if you want Hayward black holes to be allowable in quantum gravity, then you have to deal with such infrared non-localities. So aside from specific values of n, modified black holes with matrix admitting this asymptotic expansion would require large distance non-localities. And this applies to Hayward and Bardeen black holes, but do not apply, for instance, to Dimnikova black holes. Dimnikova black holes, if you know how they look like, so they have an exponential of the radial coordinate in the metric. And therefore, the asymptotic expansion would be different than the one I have considered. So Dimnikova black holes or other black holes which depend on the exponentials of the radial coordinate would evade the constraints that I have told you about. But now, a key question is, if I want to have this type of regular black holes with that type of scaling, and therefore I have this type of non-local ansatz, the next question is whether these non-localities are consistent. So now, let's talk about non-localities in quantum gravity. I mentioned already, and this is a reminder for you, the higher derivative part of the effective action in general can contain functions of the D'Alembertson. And we have a bunch of examples in from different theories of quantum gravity. Not only quantum gravity, but also in the context of effective field theory, here I forgot to add that there are logs of the D'Alembertson that come from one-loop computations. And speaking of approaches to quantum gravity, the form factors can be of this type in the case of non-local gravity, in spin form models this type of form factors involving inverse functions of this type of combination have been found. There are asymptotic safety models, or like models that could mimic asymptotic safety at high energies involving hyperbolic tangents of the Deleberchian, but also models which involve indeed these infrared null localities. So in principle, it would not be so crazy to consider this type of null localities. And in general, at least within the annulus of convergence, we could then expand generally these four factors as a sum of powers of box, which also involve the negative degree terms. And I also have to say, like, in the spirit of putting together bottom-up and top-down perspective, that there is also an interest in this type of infrared null localities from the point of view of phenomenology, and in particular to mimic dark energy. So far, there hasn't been really a strong deviation from there is not a deviation, but no conflict with observation coming from these null localities. So at least from an observational point of view, they would look viable. And they could make regular black holes compatible with the principle of least action, and therefore maybe it makes sense to investigate them a little bit more. And one of the constraints that I thought it would have been relevant is black hole entropy, because black hole entropy is a quantity that we can compute starting from an axon. Even in quantum gravity, it doesn't matter if it is a fundamental axon or an effective axon, by using the world entropy. And this is the second example of top-down plus bottom-up that I will show you in this talk. So just some basics about black hole entropy. So it can be computed using world formula, so starting from a Lagrangian, and in particular, the Lagrangian that I will be considering is Einstein-Hilbert plus this higher derivative part. And so there has been some work in the literature about computing corrections to the black hole entropy coming from higher derivatives. So in particular, there has been some work by Xavier Calmet. I actually used the first name, I don't know why. And they computed the one-loop corrections to the entropy formula, finding that as a consequence, one also gets logarithmic corrections to the standard classical black hole entropy. On top of the logarithm that one would expect from effective field theory, the analytic part of the effective action of these form factors may be expanded in this way. And so one would have a negative degree term, which I motivated you before, and positive degree terms. And this should be a plus, actually. Now, as for positive degree terms, positive degree operator, so those with a positive power of the D'Alembertian, the corresponding correction to the black hole entropy have been computed in the literature. And one finds that corrections coming from this type of operator, so positive power of the D'Alembertian, are, as one would expect, suppressed compared to the Bekenstein-Hawking area law. But as we go to negative degree terms, so from in the case of infrared null localities, one may wonder, well, what happens then in this case, because the expectation is that one gets the opposite of this behavior, so something that is dominant over the Bekenstein-Hawking contribution, and that this would be something that we should worry about, and in particular, how dominant that is. And there are a number of computational caveats, because in the case of infrared null localities, in order to apply the Wald formula, one needs to go through a localization procedure, so essentially replacing infraredonal localities with additional degrees of freedom. So now the setup is the same as before, the case of large static spherically symmetric and asymptotically flat black holes. So we have again these two Laplace functions which can be different in principle, and we have asymptotic corrections of this form, and we can safely use this because we have seen before that this type of solutions with this type of Laplace functions can come from a principle of least action with infrared non-localities. And now we focus on terms that are of negative degree, so infrared non-localities, and compute the corresponding contributions to world entropy formula using the contribution to the entropy by using the world entropy formula. And one gets dimensionless corrections of this form. So there is a limit for R that goes to the event horizon, because this is where the entropy has to be computed. And we have a sum of different contributions. So there are three of these form factors. I goes from 1 to 3. This n, in principle, can take any value, starting from n equal to 1, which is the simplest non-locality 1 over box. And each of the fi leads to a contribution to the entropy formula. And these are I is a complicated function of the Laplace functions, so I did not write it down because it's very lengthy. And at this point, so here essentially we have these 1 over box to n operators which are which act on functions of the radial coordinate. And we need to know what's the action of these operators. Actually, the inversion, how they act on the functions of R is not that easy. So we had to derive a recursion formula to compute the action of 1 over box to n operators on a general function of R. And for n equal to 1, one has this type of integral definition, which also depends on some boundary conditions. But all that I'm going to say will be independent of boundary conditions. We checked that explicitly. And now let's go to the main results. So what I'm going to show you is for the case where the two Laplace functions coincide, because it's just easier to visualize. But we have checked that the results are the same if we also take two different Laplace functions. Depending on the type of corrections, it is possible that there is an event horizon or there is no event horizon. And when the event horizon exists, it is located in exactly this location. So the R event horizon is a modification of the Schwarzschild radius, which depend on two parameters. Alpha, which is this index here, which drives, tells me what is the correction to Schwarzschild black holes. And A, which is a dimensionless version of this coefficient here. And it is given by this formula. So in general, we would expect the entropy to depend depend on A, on alpha, and the coefficients C1, C2, C3 for every correction that I have to the Einstein-Hilbert action. And now I'm going to show you the first correction, the leading order correction to the entropy as a function of R over the Schwarzschild radius. And I'm going to show you this as a functional, as a dependence on R, because in principle what we have to do is to take then, to compute the entropy, we need to take the limit as R goes to the event horizon. So let's see how this shows in the plots. And in particular, in both plots, I have taken the three coefficients to be 1, okay? And then here I set A to this value and showed the result for several alpha, several of these. And here is the opposite, so I fixed alpha and changed the A. And in all cases, so where the dashed lines indicate the location of the event horizon when it exists. Doesn't always exist for all these cases. And the result is that the first contribution to the entropy, whenever an horizon exists, diverges. So infrared non-localities, when there exists an event horizon, seem to give a divergent contribution to the black hole entropy, as you can see. So essentially, as one takes the limit, as R goes to the event horizon, which is the limit to take to compute the contribution, to compute the correction to the entropy, here we have a divergence. And because of the recursion formula of the in the computation of the 1 over box to n contribution, if the first contribution diverges, all of the other contributions diverge. And we checked explicitly that the result is independent of the different parameters that we have in here, in the ansatz, whether the Laplace function coincides, and it is also independent of the initial conditions. One thing one may wonder about is whether there can be a cancellation of divergences. And the answer is yes, there may be a cancellation of divergences, but it requires some fine-tuning. So in particular, we checked the case of charged black holes, so where alpha, the correction to Schwarzschild black holes, is equal to 2. So we have some dependence on a charge and a mass. And once again, we have this expression for the correction, the nth correction to the entropy, and there are these three contributions. Each of these contributions diverge, so one may wonder, maybe for some combinations of these coefficients, one could cancel the divergence and still save these theories with infrared non-localities. But so here, what I'm showing you is the critical ratio of C to 1 over C 3 1, such that one is able to cancel the divergence. And essentially, this critical ratio as a function of Q over the charge, the black hole charge over the mass, is non-trivial. So yes, there can be some cancellation, but one really needs to fine-tune the coefficients in order to cancel divergences, and one should do that order by order in these contributions to the black hole entropy. So it is not impossible, but it is disfavored. So in this case, the consistency of a black hole entropy coming from infrared non-localities, the consistency of black hole entropy disfavors this type of infrared non-localities because they generally lead to divergences. Correspondingly, if there are black holes models which require such infrared non-localities, then they are likely ruled out unless they come from a theory of quantum gravity which gives you precisely the coefficients that cancel the divergence of the black hole entropy. And this leads to my summary and conclusions. So I try to argue there are different approaches that one can take in general in quantum gravity or to understand quantum black holes and quantum cosmology. One may try hard in doing computations and deriving predictions from scratch, so in a top-down manner, or construct black hole spacetimes by interpolating between a regime, the general relativity regime, and the regime where an ad hoc singularity resolution is imposed, but this would not give much constraints and would be likely not directly related to quantum gravity theories. But we can also try to exploit both approaches together. And this could provide the fundamental tests for phenomenological models, which have been constructed independently of the specific of quantum gravity, but also non-trivial constraints for fundamental theories. And this is a general statement, and what I have done in this talk was to focus on black holes, showing that by imposing the stationary action principle, one can put constraints on the quantum black holes and even rule out models, those that cannot be related to a principle of least action in quantum gravity, not even at the large distance scales. And at the same time, one can feed that back and use model consistency in order to put constraints on what we would expect from quantum gravity. And with this, I thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. Unless you have questions. Yes?
Yes.
You have considered just in quantum gravity, but for example, Bardeen metric and also Simpson viscera are also interpreted in GR.
Mm-hmm.
So just GR plus nonlinear electrodynamics or scattered
yes.
fields.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was wondering maybe if you try to do both things, so quantum gravity correction plus also some field, maybe you just don't need.
Mm-hmm, yes. Yeah, yeah, that is true. So some types, so Hayward Bardeen solution may be derived from GR plus matter modifications, not really higher derivative corrections. And this is, in a sense, part of the second alternative that I have shown you in slide two, so there can be singularity resolution from quantum gravity or perhaps from matter modifications. But also, so it is true that one can derive that from nonlinear electrodynamics, but one would really need to go to some non-trivial modifications of matter degrees of freedom, matter engaged degrees of freedom that so far haven't been observed, at least to my best knowledge. While requiring modifications to the Schwarzschild metric to come from higher derivatives, I find that more natural in the sense that we don't yet have constraints on these higher derivative terms, so they may be there. We have a strong motivations to expect that they are there, and therefore they would naturally lead to modifications to Schwarzschild black holes or black holes in general relativity in general.
Do we have experimental constraints on the modified Newton's law that these Laplace functions?
Yes. So there is. Some work in this direction by the group of Michele Maggiore and also some work by Salvatore Capozziallo. So they have constrained this type of operators, but it seems like one over box square. I think, if I remember correctly, the one over box square gives some inconsistencies, but the one over box, not that I know. So,
could what do you call them?
Infrared velocity
profiles of galaxies.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or things like this, like experimentally,
mm-hmm.
Do we know if some of these?
I think that not everything has been checked. So, what I can say is that. Everything that I looked at in the literature and that I found in the literature seems to be consistent, but I would not bet that that is consistent in general with all experimental data in particular because, and I think this is why you are asking the question, one over box times R square would weight the same as R, would be of the same order. And therefore, I mean, it is clearly leads to effects that could be observed somewhere. whether there have been there are inconsistencies found in the literature. I don't know. So I looked at the literature for quite a while, but I could not find anything.
Maybe you said it, but like you still assume that the Schwarzschild is still like has this spherical symmetric. So you are so. Why is it? I understand for the compositional point of view why you do that. Mm-hmm. Could you expect that like there is some deformation and you lose a bit of the spherical symmetry?
Of course, yes. I mean, we don't expect the
interplay between what mm-hmm. you said and these new terms and stuff. So I mean,
yes,
just
yes. Yeah, I mean the constraint yes could in principle be affected by that. Also because black holes in nature will not be spherically symmetric, so it is of course very important as a second step to do the computation in the case of non-spherically symmetric black holes. This is what we are doing now, and it's much more complicated because then you have an angular dependence. So instead of constraints on the coefficients, you have differential equations for this functional dependence on the angular coordinates. The constraints could, in principle, change, but I don't know exactly how that will turn out to be.
Can you comment on those solutions that do not have an horizon at the very end of the talk? You say, oh, some of these.
Mm-hmm. It is possible that one has horizonless solution. I mean, it depending on how you modify the metric, you might destroy the horizon, or at least, I mean, the horizon would, the solutions for R would become complex. That's a possibility in principle, although I would not expect it, because for large black holes, I would hope that there are no such strong effects like destroying an horizon. Maybe for smaller black holes, you can have something that differs more from what we know from general relativity. But if I focus on the asymptotic, I would expect that I can trust the results of general relativity, and in particular the existence of an horizon for Schwarzschild-like solutions.
Cool. Let's thank Alessia again.
Thanks for joining.